Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
What's the Hindi word now? Tired. What is it? Again. That's what I said. I broke. Again. Never hit the ground. Well, I just walked in on the last few minutes of Maharaj's talk. I really don't know what to say. Please help with the Ratha Yatra. What are these posters here? Oh, it's the Blue Mountain. You heard about the Blue Mountain?
What
should I say about that? Help with the Ratha Yatra. Please chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Chant Hare Krishna and be very happy. Be extremely happy. That's not an order, but if you do it nicely, you will be. Because Krishna consciousness is such a great gift. Ratha Yatra is such a great opportunity to give this great gift. Because Lord Chaitanya is giving Krishna consciousness in ways which were never given before. Even though it's Kali Yuga and everything is really a mess. Yeah, everything's such a mess. Kalir Doshinide Rajan. Sukadeva Goswami says in Srimad Bhagavatam, this Kali Yuga is Dosha Nide. Dosha. This does not mean a certain type of South Indian delicacy. That's dosa. This is dosha. And dosha in Sanskrit means fault. Fault. Something is wrong. And nidhe means ocean. Kali Yuga is just an ocean of fault. It's not like an ocean of so many things, including some faults. It's an ocean of faults. And if you come across something sometimes which is not a fault, which is nice, then really the situation you should think is, wow, where did that come from? And so many of the things which are meant to be nice things, they're not so nice. I read a couple of years ago a charitable organization in Germany. Someone somehow discovered that of the money they collected, it was something like well under 10% got used for the actual whatever the welfare work was. And the other 90%, it may have been 95 or something, percent of the income went to quote unquote administrative expenses, which meant first and foremost the people's wages. They were doing quite well. And then, you know, some paltry percentage went to actually help the suffering people that they were meant to be helping. So there was a scandal. A 3 years ago maybe, there was a scandal. How can this be? Uproar. And the leader of that organization said, hey, wait a minute. We're no different from any other similar organization. They're all like this. Don't make a big deal about it. So Kaliya Doshinide Raja, this Kali Yuga is an ocean of fault. And, you know, fortunately, our Hare Krishna food for life, to my knowledge, it is one of the few, if not the only one, such organization. Of course, it's transcendental, but where people give money, but actually the vast majority, if not practically all, you know, we pay, I think, the pot washers. Last I checked, we had 2 pot washers who got paid regular salaries. But otherwise, the vast majority goes to the actual cause. So Kaliya Doshinide Raja, this Kali Yuga is an ocean of fault. But Lord Chaitanya, despite that, the hopelessness, utter, outright hopelessness of the situation, Lord Chaitanya has given the most wonderful process to give the highest thing by anybody's standards, what to speak of Kali Yuga standards, by even the most advanced devotee standards of any sampradaya. Lord Chaitanya has come to give the very, very highest thing, which is otherwise not available to anyone, to the residents of Kali Yuga. So, Lord Chaitanya, through the Sankirtan movement, and through Rathyatra, it's also, in a sense, Lord Chaitanya's program, at least he participated in it in very profound ways. But Lord Chaitanya has given this process, Sankirtan movement, so we can experience higher level, the highest levels of what can be experienced in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, the highest thing that can be experienced is Vipralamba Bhava, the ecstasy of love for Krishna in separation. It is actually millions of times, I was just reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, millions of times more ecstatic and wonderful than the ecstasy of meeting Krishna. So, let me just tell you a little story, which I was going to tell on Ram Navami, but I won't be here, so I'll tell it to you now. Lord Ram was banished to the forest. Mother Sita went with him, despite his protesting that she shouldn't come, she came. Lord Lakshman came. So, the three of them went into the forest, and they were on their way to Dandakaranya, and they stopped in Navadweep, Mayapur area. They stopped there. Generally, you don't read about that, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur has discussed it. So there they were, in a part of Navadweep Mandala, the Mayapur area, greater area. And they stayed some days, and Mother Sita saw one day, there is Lord Ram sitting and smiling. He's like deeply immersed in thought on something obviously very wonderful, and he's smiling. And so she approached Lord Ram and said, "What is it that you're smiling about? What wonderful subject is it? Please tell me." So Lord Ram said, "Yes, I am thinking of how we are going to appear here in the future in another incarnation. I'm going to appear and you're going to appear also with me, and you'll be my wife also. I'm thinking about that." And Sita was so happy. "Really? That is just ecstatic. Tell me more." And Lord Ram said, "Yes, we are going to, or I am going to, spread love for us through the Sankirtan movement, through chanting and chanting the holy names." And Sita said, "Wow, that's wonderful. Tell me more." And Lord Chaitanya, Lord Ram's really smiling now. "Yes. And we will marry. Your name will be Vishnu Priya. And there will be, I'll be spreading the Sankirtan movement. So many people getting love of God. So wonderful." And Sita's just dizzy in ecstasy. And Lord Ram said, "And then I'll leave you and take sannyas." And he's still sitting there with a big smile, but not Sita. And Sita said, "What do you mean you'll leave me and take sannyas? How could you be so cruel? How could you do that? That's not right. You mustn't do that." And Lord Ram said, "The thing is, what you don't understand, is that by doing that, I will be giving you the greatest gift, Vipralamba Seva, Vipralamba Bhava, the ecstasy of service and separation, which is millions of times more relishable than the ecstasy of being together." Sita was still not convinced. And Lord Ram said, "You know, I wanted to give it to you now when I got banished. I told you, stay in the palace, stay home. But you said no. And I told you, you have to. And you said, I'm not going to. And you said, even if you order me to, I'm going to come anyway. So I wanted to give it to you, but I couldn't. So now, in this appearance, I am going to give it to you, because I want you to have it. It's the greatest gift. So therefore I'm going to take sannyas, and then you can't come with me. We cannot be Mr. and Mrs. Swami." So therefore, by this arrangement of my taking sannyas, I will be giving you this greatest gift. And Lord Ram is smiling, so happy. And Mother Sita doesn't really know what to make of it. So anyway, then when they appeared, Lord Chaitanya and Vishnu Priya, Lord Chaitanya did that. And Vishnu Priya was left. She was 16. Lord Chaitanya was 24. She was 16. And she lived to be 96. She lived another 80 years in separation. And it's a little bit of a long story, but basically she cried for 80 years. She didn't sleep. She just cried. But it wasn't just the crying which, you know, We hear sometimes, oh, my husband left me, my boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it may be, or some problem arose, or someone left me, that sort of crying. It was crying in that ecstasy of separation. So this is the great gift of Lord Chaitanya. The highest levels of Krishna consciousness, it's inconceivable. And the Rathyatra is just one of the most wonderful paths of that. And how Lord Chaitanya participated in that, just truly amazing, incredible, Lord Chaitanya's participation in Rathyatra. So please, make the most of it. You may have got the message now about the Blue Mountain. Did you get the message? Okay, let's hope so. But please help in any way you can, or any way you're asked. Because, of course, Rathyatra is nectar in any way, whether you are engaged in some service, whether you are just sort of like a member of the audience moving around and looking at the different things and so on like that. It's all ecstasy. But the higher ecstasy, well, it depends really. But definitely there's very high ecstasy in doing service and helping make the festival a success. Srila Prabhupada once, when one devotee, well, Prabhupada's Mahaprasadam had been distributed to the devotees, one devotee had got a gulab jamun, which Prabhupada had taken a bite out of. And this devotee's looking at it on his plate. Wow, I got Prabhupada's mercy. And another devotee grabbed it and ate it, and it was gone. And the first devotee was just too stunned. But then he went to Prabhupada and complained. And Srila Prabhupada said, ah, he was very intelligent. And then Prabhupada said, there are two types of devotees. One likes to eat prasadam, the other likes to serve prasadam. Prabhupada said they are both good, but the one who likes to serve prasadam is better. So, whatever you do in the festival, you know, it's all good. But if you can help and do some service, that's also especially nice, so please do that. And please forgive me for coming in late, but duty called. Hare Krishna.
Do it like we did.
So I have a question here. Okay. Culture is imbibed. We each have our own perception of what is the culture that Srila Prabhupada gave us. However, they vary. Our perceptions vary. How do we identify and imbibe that pure and undeviated culture that Prabhupada gave? Well, I would say, you know, that's a subject perhaps for a book. It's the BBT. Anyway. But one thing I could say, it's definitely part of the picture, is that you can imbibe that, you can learn that through associating with devotees who have personal association with Srila Prabhupada, and particularly some little more extended personal association, not to witness Prabhupada's culture in action in different situations. Yeah. You know, of course, it's also true, you read Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said everything's there in my books. Of course, it's true. But then, you know, this is also an interesting perspective on the subject. Prabhupada, you know, his life was like a living book. He is Acharya. He doesn't just teach by his words, although he does very, very much, but he teaches by his life's example. So those who got to witness his life's example, particularly on a more extended level, on a more regular basis like that, we can learn a lot from them. It's a very interesting type of perspective on Prabhupada. And in that regard, we're fortunate, we're very fortunate to have with us His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj, who did get a considerable amount of personal association with Srila Prabhupada. So please make the most of his association. Is that okay? Okay.
What is the most effective way to focus on Krishna while chanting? By hearing. It's chanting and hearing. You don't have to think something, you don't have to put something in front of you, you don't have to do anything artificial. The whole method is chanting with attention. Srila Prabhupada told one devotee, just try to hear yourself chant sincerely.
In Krishna consciousness, we don't hear lectures about forgiveness. You obviously haven't taken Govardhan Prabhu's seminar on forgiveness. But anyway, maybe we don't hear much lectures about forgiveness. What happens when one devotee offends another? Should the devotee forgive and become friends again? Well, we should not hold grudges. We should not carry chips on our shoulders. In general, just as a general rule, we should not, you know, be satisfied by carrying around with us, you know, a negative attitude towards another devotee. A perspective. You know, this is also a big subject, as I said. There are seminars, not just lectures, but series of lectures, seminars on the very subject. An interesting perspective, though, is that what goes around comes around. In other words, you get your karma. In other words, what happens to you, particularly if something just sort of happens out of nowhere, it's just on top of you like that, like someone walks up to you and offends you, it is very, very likely that it is your karma. It is just sort of too likely, really. So now, what does that mean? It means previously you offended someone. And now you're getting the reaction in that out of the blue, perhaps, for perhaps no apparent reason, you may have someone walk up to you and just say a whole lot of nasty things to you. And even in objective terms, it may be inaccurate. They may think you did something, and so they're now upset, but actually you didn't do it at all. I mean, these things happen sometimes. And then you may feel like you're a victim. Look at me, I'm a victim. I have every right to get angry, upset, and so on. It is my right, because I am the victim. I have victims' rights to complain and be angry and upset. I have victims' rights. Sometimes we give the example. Someone walks up to you and punches you in the nose. Why? Because you punched someone in the nose before. Now you're just getting the reaction. If you had not punched the first person in the nose earlier, this person now would not have walked up to you and punched you in the nose. It is only because you punched the person in the nose before. So in effect, you could say, what has happened now you got punched in the nose? You could say, you just punched yourself in the nose. You get me? Get me, right? Except. No, that's true. In karmic terms, at least in a general situation, it definitely works like that. It is karma. Karma rules. Angst rules, some philosopher said once. Karma rules, actually. So therefore, you know, if you understand in those terms that I got offended simply because I offended before, and if I had not offended before, I would not have been offended, but rather if I tolerated before and been very nice, maybe now I would have been treated very nicely instead of offended. So if we can take responsibility for our karma, that will help us to forgive. It will really help us to forgive. And also for devotees, you know, particularly for those who are trying to be serious about their Krishna consciousness, things that happen in your life, the general understanding should be, it is Krishna's arrangement. Particularly if something more dramatic happens, it is Krishna's arrangement. He wants me to learn something like that. So in that light, if it's Krishna's arrangement and he wants me to learn something, then of course we should forgive and tolerate and not, you know, get into a big mental tizzy about it and plan how we'll get revenge. I will get him. I will put something in his halava. In his bean's curry. He's not looking. One time a devotee approached Prabhupada and complained about another devotee. That this devotee is like this and that and the other thing, and you know, I don't know what to do. And Srila Prabhupada said, just tolerate him. Just tolerate. There's so many things in this world. We have to be tolerant. And then the devotee continued to say, but Srila Prabhupada, oh, he does this and he does that, and carried on in that vein. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, you should try to tolerate him as I tolerate you. So don't worry. Just as you have to tolerate someone, you can practically guarantee it. There's someone who is also having to tolerate you. Really? Or there may be a number of people who are sort of partially tolerating you. Yeah. So, you know, these are some perspectives. They may help us to be forgiving, to be tolerant, and not just to jump into victim consciousness. I have my constitutional right to get angry, upset, and plan revenge, because I am the victim. It is my constitutional right. Hare Krishna.
On the subject of forgiveness, there will be a workshop in April here in Durban. Empowerment through forgiveness. If you're interested, contact Hari Dev Prabhu. And if you don't, we'll never forgive you. How can the youth be attracted to practice and stay in this movement? Well, in my experience, which goes back a while, the most attractive features of the Krishna consciousness movement are chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophy. So have lots of kirtan, have super ultra fantastic prasadam, and a little philosophy to go with it. And whoever is not attracted to that won't be attracted to anything. Or maybe they'll be, anyway, hard to miss. Kirtan, 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 and more kirtan. Prasadam, prasadam, and more prasadam. And philosophy.
Well, the last one I have here. What do we do with the quote-unquote speech marks, ordinary tulsi plants sprouting all over the yard? I guess you mean your yard. I don't know what you mean by ordinary. You mean
what?
Normal round tulsis. You mean the basil? Why didn't you say basil? I was there, well, I wasn't in the room at the time. But when we first got Bhaktivedanta Manor in 1973, and Srila Prabhupada came, and some very pleasant Hindu people had given the devotees this big tulsi plant. Wow! This tulsi was at least 2 meters tall, with these big, big leaves, and kind of looked somewhat different, but our devotees were not very well versed in these subject matters at the time. So anyway, we took this plant, and we were worshipping the plant, and Srila Prabhupada came just days later, and he was present. Anyway, he saw the tulsi. I don't know if he was present in the tulsi arati, I think not. I think, as I recall, he was inspecting the place, and in the deity room was this tulsi, or this plant. And Srila Prabhupada looked at it and said, "Ah, you are worshipping Basil Devi." So by now we have woken up to these things. But, and one time, according to Bhakti Vishwamba Madhava Maharaj, who's really, you know, deeply into tulsi, he tells a story, Prabhupada said, that Prabhupada saw such a basil. Shishi Radharadana Ki. And Prabhupada said, "No, this is not right, this is not tulsi." And the devotee said, "But Srila Prabhupada, this is a sister of tulsi." And Prabhupada said, "We do not want the sister. We want the real thing." So that basil, as we hear, is very good for making, like, what do you call them? Not spice mixes, but herbal things, right? For, like, certain types of cooking. You can dry the leaves, I believe, and they're quite nice. But that is not worshipable. It's tulsi is worshipable, actually. So if you've got Tulsi as such popping up all around, well, what you should do is identify the Tulsis and nicely take them out of the ground and put them in pots so that they don't get trodden on and so on like that. Take the trouble, even if there's a lot, but do that and look after Tulsi. Because Tulsi is worshipable, to put it mildly. Actually, Tulsi is an inhabitant of Goloka Vrindavan Dham, including your Tulsi, real Tulsi at home if you have, is actually a resident of Goloka. And of course we worship the deities, they are residents of Goloka, obviously. Prabhupada is a resident of Goloka. All these great transcendental personalities we worship. But Tulsi is the one of them who is kind enough to come before us here in a living form, in, you know, ordinary terms. The deity is the deity, but Tulsi is actually living as such, even by ordinary standards. So of course we have to look after the deities very nicely. And if they're not happy, they may leave. Some catastrophe may come. But Tulsi, you've got to live up, you've got to look after her. And if you don't, she'll die in front of your eyes. That's not good, is it? So this is a special mercy, though, to give us the opportunity to worship her in that quote-unquote living form and really care for her, and in that way, by her mercy, benefit in Krishna consciousness. But Tulsi, I mean, what? Basil, Devi, take the leaves, dry them, and use them for making nice preparations to offer to Krishna. And put a Tulsi, a real Tulsi leaf on there. Yeah. Do it like that. Okay. Okay. Or in Tamil, Nindum Sandipum. Anyone understand that? That's Tamil. Okay, that's all. Srila Prabhupada ki.